couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about some new movies, including Abominable, Judy, The Death of Dick Long, and finally a late look at Ad Astra. Plus, I'm going to look back at the movie Hot Rod from about 10 or 15 years ago. And there's going to be some news and the trailer park and, of course, the home cinema roundup featuring the 80s horror movie cult classic Fear No Evil. Because, hey, it is the last weekend before October, so we got to get ready for the horror movies, people. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
First piece of news is a sad piece of news. Actor Sid Haig died at age 80 this week. He died from complications from a lung infection. He had fell in his home earlier this month and then had some issues with fluid in the lungs, and that finally he succumbed to that this week. Most people will now recognize Sid Haig as Captain Spaulding in the Rob Zombie films House of a Thousand Corpses, The Devil's Rejects, and of course the more recent one, Three from Hell, which just came out last week in like individual events at theaters. I don't think it's getting an actual theatrical release. I think it's just doing this sort of Fathom Events things that they did with 31, which was terrible, the last Rob Zombie movie that came out. But it will eventually, of course, get hit Blu-ray and DVD very, very soon, hit on demand. I'm not a big fan of Rob Zombie's stuff, and I'm not a big fan of The Devil's Rejects. I know there are some people who think that's a fantastic movie, and I mean, compared to A House of a Thousand Corpses, it's way, way better. But there's a real love for Sid Haig that existed in the horror community. He was somebody who was supportive of other people. He had been working in stuff for decades. I mean, like since Star Trek, he had these bit roles. I mean, he got known best for the horror movies later in his life, but he was a sort of a mainstay character actor from the 60s on. And here's somebody who really carved a niche for himself. And I have the utmost respect for that sort of thing. And everything I've ever heard from people in the horror movie community was that he was a sweet guy. He was a nice guy to deal with. Sure, he played a monster on screen, but he was a sweet guy. And it's sad to see him go. I mean, 80 is that's a good run, people. He had a lot of films under his belt, and he got that final Rob Zombie movie, and good for him. Whether or not you're a big fan of horror movies, you got to kind of tip your hat at Sid Haig. And of course, it's the Captain Spaulding character is really the only character I can actually dress up for Halloween because it has a beard and a bald head and a pot belly as well. So rest in peace, Sid Haig. The next piece of news I want to talk about is Kevin Feige is in the news again, and not for Marvel. It is for another Disney property, and that is Star Wars. It was released this week that Kevin Feige has been tapped to be in charge of a new Star Wars movie. Now, this is very interesting to me because Marvel has been just on point with everything it's done. There's really no hiccup in the Marvel thread. If you look at the Marvel Studios stuff from Iron Man on, the biggest dip in the whole thing was the Incredible Hulk movie. But it recovered from that really well. And even though there's never been another Incredible Hulk movie, ostensibly Thor Ragnarok was a Thor slash Hulk movie as well. So you have him as a very popular character. So there's really been no hiccup or problem or wrinkle in the Marvel run. There has been in the Star Wars run. Of course, you had the mixed reviews and mixed remembrance of The Last Jedi. Even myself, I don't think The Last Jedi is a good movie. In fact, I think it is probably the worst of the main canon Star Wars films. I mean, yeah, and that's worse than the prequels, people. Yeah, I like the prequels better than The Last Jedi because of some of the garbage that went in on it. And there was also the problem with Solo, A Star Wars Story, which did not do terribly well in the theaters. It did not make the box office that they were hoping. I think what Kathleen Kennedy was hoping to do with Star Wars was to basically Marvelize it, make it something that you have these main stories that go into the episodes, and then you have these Star Wars stories that sort of seed around the background. Once you had the failure of Solo, which wasn't a huge failure, it still made like $400 million worldwide, it just didn't make the $1 billion they needed to justify its budget. The fact that they're tapping different filmmakers, they're actually tapping Rian Johnson to do his own trilogy, and that's fine. I mean, I don't like him mucking with the standard storyline, but he wants to do his own trilogy? Fine, just don't mess with the general storyline. But the fact that they're bringing in Kevin Feige, to me, says they want his assistance on opening up the franchise and making a successful multi-tiered franchise that has spin-off movies and smaller films and then giant movies that would rival Avengers Endgame. And I think that that's actually with the seeds of what we're seeing here. I don't think Kevin Feige is being tapped for one movie. I think they're bringing in Kevin Feige as part of their think tank to plan Star Wars movies going decades into the future. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie. That is, of course, the spinoff from Breaking Bad featuring Jesse as the character. And that drops on Netflix on October 11th, along with a small limited theatrical run.
You ready?
Yeah.
I'm interested in this simply because I thought Jesse was the best character in Breaking Bad, and I'm not alone in that assessment. I thought he had the most depth, he had the most pathos, he had the most emotional arc you've ever seen. And the trailer's really tough to play on the radio because it's just music and noise and like two lines of dialogue. So you get that little taste of it, but if you go and watch the trailer, you see tidbits and nods to different things that's happened in Jesse's storyline throughout Breaking Bad that will enrich the character and really give it drive and focus. And hopefully they're putting something together with this that is impactful and brings a lot of this stuff all to a focus that can at least get some closure for the character. The fact that there's little bits of it, you know, there's Easter eggs throughout that trailer that are all visual. You'd have to go watch it on, you know, check it on YouTube or probably Netflix as well. It has some neat stuff in there, and I'm looking forward to see what they do with it. The next one I want to hit really quickly is The Gallows Act 2, which opens on October 25th.
This thing first killed a kid in the 90s named Charlie Grimm.
Oh.
Grimm, all right. Yeah. And after that, his spirit started popping up everywhere.
Oh, I don't like this.
Yeah. So the real Charlie challenges.
Okay, wait. We're going live.
The year is 1710. And yet, if I knew it was the last year of life which is mine, and I too long for something more. More than the life my mother gave me. She bestowed upon me the name August Benjamin Rutherford.
Whoa. Vic, how are you doing it?
Not doing it, guys.
Rated R.
If you remember The Gallows, it was a found footage horror movie, and I hate found footage horror, and I just, oh, it's so awful. I'm so tired of it. And in watching this trailer, it starts out looking like it's going to be a found footage horror movie where they're live streaming some horrific event. But again, you don't see this in the trailer, but it eventually breaks off into scenes of the film where it looks like it's just shot like a traditional horror movie. And I'm okay with that. I actually saw an article or a Facebook post or something where somebody was bemoaning the fact that there are no masked killers, teen slasher movie characters anymore. There are no monsters. They all kind of ended with Ghostface in the 90s. And yeah, you can put in Pennywise, sure, but they don't have the iconic looking characters that they did in the 80s and into the 90s. And this looks like it might be trying to bring back the slasher genre for a new generation. And I'm all for that because, you know me, I love horror movies. Anyways, that's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Ad Astra and Judy.
Yeah.
welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews with an older one. It's not that old. Oh, trust me, it's not that old. It's from last week. And that is Ad Astra. Brad Pitt plays an astronaut who travels to the farthest reaches of the solar system to find his father.
What is happening out there is a crisis of unknown magnitude.
We believe your father may be involved.
My father's dead.
What exactly are you requiring from me?
We have to hold out the possibility that your father may be hiding from us.
First of all, my apologies to everybody who had to sit through that trailer twice. I know I played it last week, and I played the same blurb of the story. I'll be honest with you. This was a movie that was not screened. And neither was Rambo. So I had to either go see a double feature that Thursday night or pick one. And I didn't think I had it in me to sit through both of these movies. And especially now that I've sat through Ad Astra, I would not have survived Ad Astra on Thursday night last week. So I took a chance. I took a bullet for the team and I went to go see it this week during a matinee. And now I can actually speak on the film. And you know, every now and then I'm wrong. Every now and then I will own the fact that I misread a situation. This was not one of those times. Ad Astra was exactly what I said it was going to be. It was a pretentious load of a movie trying to be significant and trying to be either 2001 or Interstellar. One of the biggest red flags in really any movie and TV show, but I see the need for this in a TV show a little bit more, or at least I see the reason why they use it as a crutch a little bit more in a TV show. But narration in a movie is weak writing. It's like dream sequences. You put that nonsense in a movie and it loses steam because it's cliche and it's stupid and it usually overbelabors a point. And the entirety of Ad Astra involves Brad Pitt narrating everything that's going on. There's a lot of characterization and story and development that would have been nice to see rather than just hearing Brad Pitt's voice saying what was going on, my history of my father, and he did this, and I did this, and I decided to do this, and this is where we are, and it's a space race now, and blah, 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 blah. Let me talk about how important this movie is and how significant it is. Oh my gosh, it's almost as awesome as Interstellar. That's the problem with Ad Astra. It is so boring. It is colossally boring. And there's a difference between a movie that is innovative and different and goes beyond the stars like the original 2001. And even Interstellar, which has its problems, don't get me wrong, Interstellar has some crap movie making in it. But there are some things in Interstellar that are incredibly impressive. Ad Astra is derivative of both of them and unique in none of them. It is a movie that tries to be an esoteric, realistic look at space with science behind it, and then stupid science from like sitcoms added in there. They try to make themselves esoteric and realistic with space, but then they're like, well, no, let's have this big explosion, some stupid thing happen. I honestly struggled to stay awake during this movie. And that's tough to do because you're drifting in and out of dreams, so I don't know what was going on in the movie or what was part of my dreams trying to make sense of the movie. And then, like, I open my eyes and there's baboons in the space station, which makes no freaking sense whatsoever, even when it was explained to me by the people I went to go see the movie with. And I couldn't stay awake through it was so boring and so drawn out and so absurd and so ludicrous. I respect the fact that Brad Pitt wanted to make this movie, but doggone it, man. If you're going to have a passion project, make it be something better than this. Ad Astra is a stinker and a half. It sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next film, which is Judy. Renee Zellweger plays the legendary singer Judy Garland on her final musical tour in London in her later years.
Clang, clang, clang with the trolley.
I can't even get a manager.
London would offer you a lot of money.
Talk of the town is desperate to do a deal with you.
You're saying I have to leave my children if I want to make enough money to be with my children?
How dare you?
stay.
Judy? Have you seen Judy?
There's an audience out there waiting to hear you sing.
My mouth dry and it could fall apart.
Listen to me.
Judy!
I can't. You'll be fine. On you go.
Judy Garland's story is really a tragic one. I mean, it really is. If you look back at the history of it, the abuse that she suffered under the hand of MGM, trying to keep her weight down and keep her image there, and they hooked her on pills at like when she was 13 years old, and then she couldn't sleep, and they'd give her more pills for that. I mean, what they did to her was criminal. And that's a shame. But of course, it ended up making one of the biggest train wrecks in Hollywood legends. Judy Garland was a mess when she became an adult. And it's not really her fault. And that's a shame. But it is what it is. And the problem with a movie like this is we've seen these train wreck movies plenty of times before. I remember, what was that movie a couple years ago? Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool? The one with Annette Bening where she played Gloria Graham? All these movies are acted well. But the reality is, it's sort of like these biopics of singers, like, you know, when you had Elton John, or even something that's not a real biopic, like The Star is Born, or something like the Freddie Mercury biopic, sort of Queen biopic, Bohemian Rhapsody. You're kind of running through the same gauntlet. I mean, you saw the same thing when Ray came out like 15 years ago. Ray came out, then Walked the Line, and they're essentially the same story. Why? You throw enough money and ability to buy drugs at a musician, and they're going to get hooked on drugs, and they're going to kind of follow the same arc. And you get that with this Judy Garland movie. So it's kind of a drag, no pun intended. The film doesn't really cover new ground. We've seen it all before in other movies about actresses. And that's not anybody's fault. That's just the true story. And the Judy Garland story is tragic and sad and like I said, criminal to a level. I mean, Hollywood back in the 30s when she was making like Wizard of Oz had this veneer of this look of the glitz and glamour. And I think people are a little more aware of how sleazy and problematic it can be. I mean, it hasn't gotten any better, but at least I think people are more aware of that. The saving grace in this movie is Renee Zellweger's performance. And when I heard she was playing Judy Garland, I'm like, are you kidding me? Judy Garland was known for having these big eyes and big smile and lusty voice. And Renee Zellweger was famous for having none of those. But doggone it, if she doesn't really perform in this, she becomes Judy Garland. She has a transformative performance. It's one of the better performances I've seen this year. And even when she sings, I mean, yeah, you could never match Judy Garland's performance, but she does a damn good job doing it. And even at the point where they kind of have this climax near the end, where it all culminates in one song, it's something that can bring tears to your eyes, even though the movie's not that great. I mean, it's a fantastic performance in a not-so-great movie. Or it's not even that it's a not-so-great movie. It's just kind of mundane. We've seen it a dozen times before, and we see it every award season, which is a shame because Zellweger does such a fantastic job in it. I'm real mixed on this one. I think the movie's okay, but she knocks it out of the park, over the rainbow, so to speak. So I'm going to have to say Judy, I'm going to give it a kind of rocks, even though the performance is what lifts up the movie.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Abominable and the death of Dick Long. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about other new films this week. And the first one is Abominable. A girl in China stumbles across a Yeti on her rooftop and is determined to take it home to its family on Mount Everest.
There's a Yeti on my roof. Hey, boy.
Or girl.
I don't know where you came from.
Code Red!
He escaped.
I want my Yeti back!
Is that your home? No way.
You can go your own way.
I will make sure you get home, back to your family.
First of all, I am not the first one to point out how many Yeti / Bigfoot movies have we had over the last couple of years? We had Smallfoot came out. I think it was a Fox movie. I don't know. And then we had The Missing Link, which was a Laika movie. And it wasn't the best Laika movie, but it was still quite charming. And now we've got Abominable, which is about a Yeti. The big difference between this one actually looks like it's going for a global audience, mainly because it takes place in China. Not a lick of this movie, not a frame of this movie, not a character in this movie comes from the United States. And that may cheese some people off, but you know what? It's a global marketplace. China is a massive, massive box office possibility. And there's a reason why they are now making movies that have Asian characters. That is because Asia is a huge place to make money. So, you know, you had a good run, whitewashed Hollywood, but it's not like that anymore. And I'm okay with that. I really don't care about what the people look like in the movie, as long as you have a good movie. And Abominable is, it's pretty culturally fluid. I mean, yes, it takes place in China, and yes, you've got Chinese kids in it. It's this girl and I think her brother and a friend, and they are helping this Yeti get back to Mount Everest, which is an absurd thing anyways, by the way. Can I point this out? They show it. She's like in shorts and a t-shirt. She's like, let's go to Mount Everest. And they're like, yeah, sure. And I'm like, you're going to die. But they get around all that. It's more or less a road trip. And we've seen that kind of movie. We've seen the I'm going to help you get home. All the way back to like E.T. was a we're going to take you home kind of movie. And we've seen this with a lot of films where this creature, this mystical entity, it shows up in average everyday life, and the little kids bond with them, and they have to take that character to its homeland. And I think that that's very sweet, and it works in this movie, and I don't have a problem with that. The movie itself is a charming little film. It's somewhat familiar. Like I said, we've seen the story before. The big difference, what we haven't seen, is the locations. Like I said, the whole thing takes place in Asia. Yeah, I mean, some of it's on Mount Everest, some of it's in a Chinese slum. You know, it just depends. And I think the universal message of the movie is that it doesn't matter what culture it originates in. There are human truths throughout. Family and love and relationships and, you know, loyalty to your friends and your loved ones. I think that has a lot of good messages to it. It's cute. It's got vibrant animation. This is by DreamWorks. So pretty much DreamWorks and Pixar have been vying for the top spot. I mean, Pixar has pretty securely held it. But Pixar every now and then nips at its heels. You have stuff like Illumination, which is the Universal version, and Sony has its own line. But they never have that consistent push. And this is a very typical DreamWorks kind of movie. I mean, if you liked the sort of wonder and the excitement and the idea and not as much of the idea, but the philosophy and the attitude behind something like the How to Train Your Dragon movies, that's what you're getting with this DreamWorks film. And like I said, it's beautifully animated. It's very fanciful, and it works as a great fantasy for kids. So I'm going to say, I mean, Abominable, I took my son, who's 11, who's a little bit on the cusp of not caring about these kind of films, but he still thought it was charming and wonderful and beautiful. And, you know, you don't want to think too much into it. Like I said, you got kids with shorts and t-shirts taking a Yeti to Mount Everest, you know, drinking soda and eating mutated berries as their power fuel to get there. So, I mean, it's silly and ridiculous, but that's okay. It's a cartoon. It's for kids. Kids are going to like it. And I think there's enough in there for parents to like. It runs an hour, 40 minutes. So it's not too long. And it's fun. I'm going to have to say that Abominable rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the death of Dick Long. After a night of partying, a group of bandmates struggle with the truth behind the mysterious death of one of their friends.
Did you hear about the murders?
Huh?
Someone dropped this guy off in front of the ER.
Yes, we got a little carried away last night.
Once I had a secret love.
You were with Dick last night.
Yeah, I mean, not really. I mean, yeah, but like just for like a little while. I left early.
He didn't come home. How did he die?
He fell on a table saw.
Zeke, tell me the truth.
And my secret love's no secret anymore.
This movie is so hard to talk about without giving stuff away. So I'm going to try to tiptoe around all this and dance around spoilers and everything. But suffice it to say, It's about this band in Alabama, this sort of this hometown small garage band who finished band practice and want to get weird. And so they start smoking dope and drinking beer. And then something happens and they drop off one of their friends at the hospital, the emergency room. And they of course don't want to be attached to this at all. So they take his wallet. But along the way, because they're just panicking and they're doing and they're making these decisions while they're drunk. They don't really cover the tracks well. And so when the police get involved, because it's kind of this grisly, what appears to be at least a grisly murder, they haven't covered what they've done, and they have mistakes and red flags pointing to them. What's interesting about the movie is I was talking to another film critic, local film critic here in Columbus, and he made the comment that he had been reading that people were saying, is this a movie that is making fun of rural red state voters? I mean, it takes place in Alabama, people who live in, you know, low income housing, essentially, out in the woods, out in the middle of nowhere. And is it making fun of them? And what's funny, after watching it, I'm like, I don't think so. I mean, yeah, it uses that as the backdrop, but if this is no more making fun of, for lack of a better term, redneck communities, then something like My Name is Earl would. There's a certain amount of appreciation for the redneck culture, so to speak. This is no more a ripping on a community than Fargo was. If you remember Fargo from, what, 20, 23 years ago, something like that? Fargo wasn't making fun of people in Minnesota. It was presenting some of the weird awkwardness of people from Minnesota, but it never poked fun at them. It never said, you're bad people because you're from Minnesota and you're stupid and you're overly nice. Any more than I think this movie is like, you're bad people because you live in a trailer and you got an accent. I don't think it's saying that. I think this movie is just, it's presenting a bizarre situation. And let me tell you, it gets weird. You think it's weird for the first two acts. The third act, when they explain what's going on, it is really weird. And yeah, that act is going to cheese some people off. It's going to cause people to walk out of the theater. But it's an interesting movie. I mean, I'm not saying it's a great movie. It's done by the guys who did Swiss Army Man. And that's a far superior film to this one. I thought Swiss Army Man was one of the best films of that year. This one's not. I mean, it's still an interesting movie. It's one of those things that kept me watching. I wanted to make sure I got to the end of it to see what the heck happened here. But it is a little more mundane. It exists more into the average humdrum life of these people that populate the film. And while some of them are idiots and some of them aren't terribly bright, it's not that they're saying that a whole group of people are stupid. Look, if you get drunk and vape cannabis oil and smoke pot and then do something really, really stupid, you're not going to cover your tracks very well because you've been drunk. And that's, I think, all it's saying. I don't think it's saying that as something negative of a group of people. So I'm going to have to say that the death of Dick Long kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to look back at Hot Rod, talk about the box office, and go into the home cinema roundup featuring Fear No Evil. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the final movie review, which is a retro review. And I like pulling up some of these retro reviews because some of them are completely random. Some of them are just stuff that I ended up watching over the week. And I think it's worth going back and looking at. They're either a movie that's so good or so bad that they're worth revisiting. And I actually covered this movie way, 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 way back when it was released, what, like 12 years ago or something? And that is the film Hot Rod. Andy Samberg plays a man-child who dreams of being a legendary stuntman, planning the town's biggest stunt to raise money for his ailing stepfather.
So what are you supposed to be?
A stuntman?
Wow.
I just had a
great idea.
One big jump, gentlemen. The biggest jump this town's ever seen.
Let's party.
If I'm gonna jump 15 buses, my body's gonna have to be in top physical form.
You're a terrible stuntman.
What?
You're a terrible stuntman!
I'm just kidding. I can hear you. It was just really mean.
The reason I watched this movie is because I was cycling through films to watch over the weekend, because I had the weekend off. I actually had a bunch of free time where I could just goof off and garbage out and sit there with, you know, no shirt on and just my lounge pants on the couch, you know, drinking some adult beverages, eating sugar cereal like Captain Crunch or Count Chocula, and just enjoying myself and not having to worry about any other cares in the world. And my son was in the room, and he's 11, and I said, we had watched the series Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which stars Andy Samberg. And I'm like, oh, you might like this, because I know it just came out on Amazon Prime. I have the DVD somewhere, but I said, hey, let's watch this. And it was Hot Rod. And let me tell you, he's 11 years old. He was the perfect age to watch this movie and love it. This is done by the Lonely Island people. Jorge Tacoma and Andy Samberg, most notably, it has people like Danny McBride and Bill Hader in the film. It also has Ella Fisher. She's not part of Lonely Island, but, you know, she's the girl in this movie. And this is an absurd comedy. This is a dumb comedy that almost feels like it was shot and made in the 70s, and even should have been, because he wants to be a stuntman. His idol is Evel Knievel, who he thinks worked with his father, who has passed away. And he like puts like a fake mustache on when he does the stunts, so he looks like a guy dressing up as Burt Reynolds for Halloween. And the movie is irreverent and weird and stupid and silly, and really has no impact on the outside world whatsoever. It's not trying to answer the world's questions or the problems of nations. It's just there to be funny. And doggone if it's not. I have enjoyed this movie ever since I saw it. And when I knew nothing about it when I first saw it over a decade ago in movie theaters. And I laughed my butt off because it's silly and it's stupid. And, you know, even somebody like Danny McBride, who's not my favorite actor, I think he's pretty funny in this movie. But Andy Samberg, this feels like the idea he had for a skit when he was on Saturday Night Live, but he could never quite make it work. I mean, look, I'm from Columbus, Ohio. Evel Knievel jumped 14 buses in Kings Island, which is about a 90-minute drive from my house, back in the 70s. And that was like a huge deal in the 70s. Nobody cares about stunts now. But this character kind of lives in the past. And there's something fascinating about it. And what's funny about this movie is as absurd and as silly and as dumb as it is, and how much slapstick comedy and bathroom humor is used in there and lowbrow ideas, there's a certain amount of heart to there too. And so that's part of the reason I love this film. Hot Rod, I think, still holds up. It will always be a movie I will enjoy. And I don't care if nobody else does. I'm going to have to say Hot Rod totally rocks. If you haven't seen it, go check it out. It's on Amazon Prime right now.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office really quick. Last week, Downton Abbey just blew up. I mean, the Abbey didn't blow up, but the movie blew up. It made $31 million over the weekend. That was like 50% more than people were expecting. I remember the predictions were like, well, it might make $20 million. Ha! Hold my beer or hold my champagne. They made $31 million over the... And that's with old people coming. My mom went to go see... My mom, every week, she goes out to a movie and dinner with a bunch of her friends from church. They tried to go see Downton Abbey, but it was sold out. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Well, of course, they went to like the... They wanted to go to the 7 o'clock show. I go, Mom, go to the 10 o'clock show. No one will be there. But still, $31 million for a PBS show that makes a movie like 5 years after the series left the air? That's unheard of. You may get a whole franchise of Downton Abbey movies from now on because it did so well. And it's a sweet little movie. Ad Astra made $19 million, which I guess is on track for what it wanted to. Rambo Last Blood came in just under that. I mean, like less than $1.5 million below Ad Astra. And then it goes It Chapter 2 and everything else down the list. This week, I think it's going to be abominable. That makes sense. It's been like over a month since a kid's movie has released or a cartoon. And it's not a bad little film. And there's really not a whole lot of competition for it. I don't think there's going to be this massive exodus to the theaters to go see Judy And while I think Down Abbey's going to hold a lot better, I mean, it's going to have a 60% plus hold over the weekend because old people take a long time to get to theaters. It's still not going to hold enough that Abominable will top it. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on an old film from the early 1980s, Fear No Evil, which is brought back to Blu-ray by Shout Factory, or their horror movie genre label, Scream Factory. And Shout Factory has been digging up a whole bunch of cult classics, and that's fantastic because we're getting Blu-ray releases of some great movies that I never thought they'd get a DVD release after, let alone a Blu-ray. And in this one, Lucifer is reincarnated and starts to develop his powers in high school, while three archangels must find each other to defeat him.
Alexandria High School, class of 81. All the students are going to hell, except for Andrew. He sent them there. Evil. It'll scare the devil out of you.
What I find so fascinating about this movie is because it was made in the 1980s, early 80s, which was right in the middle of the slasher movie craze. But it also happens to be right after the big push in the 70s for sort of religious horror movies. I find it funny that Hollywood is in general, especially kind of like 70s and beyond, Hollywood is pretty much a secular endeavor. They only find Jesus when they make a movie about the devil or exorcisms. So when you have The Exorcist, or you have The Omen, or you have the new movies like The Conjuring, that's when you get very devout Christians working in the films. Otherwise, nobody talks about their religion. I always find that funny. Hollywood finds Jesus when it wants to make money with a horror movie. And in this one, they do that. And it's just this weird mix of this religiously based horror film and a slasher movie. Because it takes place in a high school, you have all the archetypes. You have the bullies, you know, basically the pink ladies from Greece. They're all wearing like these satin jackets and they're like a motorcycle gang. And there's bullies and there's good kids and there's a good girl. But she's like the reincarnated archangel. But it's not a slasher movie. But somehow it just goes off the rails when Lucifer finally, you know, develops his powers. It's insane what goes on. I mean, he has a guy kill somebody with a dodgeball in gym class. He does a blood sacrifice on an altar. He creates zombies that then attack a skinny dipping couple in the middle of a fountain. I mean, it's insane the kind of carnage that happens in this movie. It's really entertaining, and you never quite settle on what it is, because you're like, oh, it feels like it's trying to be something like The Omen. Oh wait, no, there's the bully, so it's going to be a slasher movie. I mean, it follows the same tropes as a slasher movie, only instead of a machete they're using zombies and dodgeballs. It's the weirdest thing. But man, is that this movie isn't fun to watch, especially near the end. It reminds me a little bit of how crazy The Manitou gets, where it just goes completely off the rails in the third act, and that's so fun. And it's a great movie to come out right now because it's right for Halloween. It's a good time to check this one out. The Blu-ray doesn't have a ton of new features. I mean, it's got a commentary and it's got an interview with the star and the special effects guy, but it's not flush with new stuff. And there's a lot of garbage in the movie. There's a lot of slow scenes and writing that doesn't quite work. And there's some real clunky editing. But I mean, just for what it is, it's a lot of fun to watch. If you've never seen it, if you have a love for 80s horror movies, this is a real must-see. I'm going to say it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Other movies that are out on DVD and Blu-ray this week include Yesterday, Child's Play, the crappy remake, not the original, Shaft, Anna, and Legends of Tomorrow Season 4. And that is it. Next week I'm going to be coming back to talk about Joker, but until then, you have a fat time at the movies.